Across workplaces, classrooms, and public debates, women are often judged first by how they look rather than by what they know or contribute. The bias shows up in subtle remarks, hiring choices, pay gaps, and even in how leaders are introduced. When appearance or stereotypes define the lens, respect for skills, ideas, and leadership is pushed aside. This series asks a simple question: what would change if women were valued beyond looks or outdated labels? We examine stories of women who push past these limits, the data that reveals lasting inequities, and the cultural shifts that begin when respect is tied to ability instead of image. Through lived accounts, reporting, and reflection, the chapters follow how stereotypes are formed, how they harm, and what happens when dignity is defended. The journey is about more than fairness. It's about reshaping the very standards of respect. Chapter 1, The First Lens. The council chamber is warm under the lights. A scientist adjusts the mic. She is here to explain a water study with clear numbers and a simple plan. Before she speaks, a council member compliments her dress. Laughter rises. The moment is small. The signal is loud. Across fields like science, law, teaching, and the arts, this first lens shows up early. Women step into rooms ready to share work. The room looks first at hair, clothing, age, and body. Respect is shaped before a single fact is heard. The cost is not only personal. Good ideas lose time. Decisions drift toward image. The public pays for that drift. A producer reviews a morning rundown. The segment introduces a surgeon by her first name and a joke about scrubs. A male guest in the next block is doctor and renowned. The producer moves fast. The language slips by. Words carry a quiet weight. Titles and framing form a baseline of respect. A manager screens two applicants. Both meet the bar. One resume lists a leave to care for a family member. The manager cannot see the skill that filled those years. He worries about fit. The candidate senses the shift on the second interview. She leaves with the same skill she brought in. She leaves without an offer. This chapter lays out the stakes. It asks why appearance and stereotypes still press down on merit. It shows the front end of the problem. It holds back solutions for later. Here is the pattern in view. In classrooms, girls hear comments on looks when boys hear comments on ideas. Praise attaches to polish and charm more than method or grit. By college, that loop has run for years. In group projects, the same loop sets roles. Women are pulled toward note-taking and logistics. Men are steered to whiteboards and pitch. The pitch gets the grade. The habit hardens into a norm. On campaign trails, women candidates face a double bind. Dress too formal and the word is cold. Dress too casual and the word is unserious. The policy paper is sound. The town hall is packed. The coverage dwells on tone and smile. The public receives less information and more surface. Voters lose detail that would help them judge. In retail and service work, respect at the counter sets safety and pay. Workers report that rude or suggestive remarks are part of the job. The phrase is a shield for the person who made the remark, not for the person who heard it. When a worker raises a boundary, the schedule shifts or tips drop. The message is clear. Be pleasant. Accept comments. Keep the customer. Keep the job. In tech hiring, bias hides inside culture fit. Teams hire in their own image. The pattern is not only about men versus women. It stacks by race, age, accent, body type, and class. Stereotypes compound. A woman who does not match a narrow mold gets coded as not quite leadership. The feedback sounds polite. The effect is sharp. In news intros and conference bios, the same split appears. Women experts are framed by personal notes that do not attach to men. Mother of two sits next to a research credential. The phrase is not shameful on its own. It is out of place when it replaces a key achievement line. Every line has a slot. When a slot holds a personal tag, a skill drops out. In meetings, interruptions map the flow of respect. A woman offers an idea. No notes are taken. Later, the same idea appears under a different voice. The group hears it as new. This is not fiction. It is a pattern described across sectors. The result is a record that misses the origin of work. Credit moves away from the person who did the thinking. These scenes form the setup. Their common thread is the first lens. Appearance and stereotypes step in before skill. Respect attaches to the surface. That attachment shapes pay, promotion, airtime, and influence. It also shapes safety. When a person is reduced to a look, lines soften around what others feel free to say or do. One teacher recalls a staff meeting. She proposed a new reading block with measured steps and a clean schedule. The principal smiled and called her Sunshine. The plan did not get a trial. 2 months later, a similar plan came forward from a different teacher with a different style. The trial began that week. The plan worked. Her name was not on it. A lawyer in court keeps a notebook of objections and timing. She knows the rules. She knows the judge's style. On a break, a peer advises a friendlier lipstick for the afternoon session. She writes a note to herself. Stay on the law. In the afternoon, she wins her motion. The comment about lipstick stays with her longer than the ruling. The ruling is on paper. The comment is in the air. A young engineer joins a stand-up. She speaks to a delay in a part. The lead interrupts with a joke about her resting face. The room laughs. She finishes her point in a low voice. After the meeting, another engineer thanks her for the catch. He saw the same issue. He did not speak up because the room shifted off serious. The delay becomes a week. The customer notices. A journalist calls three sources about industry hiring. Each source offers numbers and then a warning. Do not use my name. They fear backlash. They fear being seen as the problem person. The risk of speaking is real. The cost of silence is also real. Without names, a story lands softer. The system keeps moving without clear pressure. Respect is not a soft metric in these moments. It is measurable in how often someone is interrupted. It is visible in who gets the complex task and who gets the support work. It is audible in the words used to introduce a speaker. It is countable in who is on the stage and who is in the audience. The first lens influences every count. This is not about praise that notices beauty or style in good faith. It is about a structure that routes attention away from skill and onto surface when women speak, lead, design, build, and decide. Once attention drifts, respect follows the drift. Once respect drifts, authority and pay follow. Power follows last. The cycle keeps turning. The people in these scenes do not share one profile. Some are young in new roles. Some are senior in old ones. Some hold more than one marginalizing label at once. The pattern changes shape in each case. It grows sharper when race, class, and age stack with gender. The load is heavier. The first lens becomes a wall. The stakes rise with scale. When a city council or board gives more air to surface than to substance, the whole city or company takes that cue. Younger staff learn the cue. They repeat it without thinking. The habit becomes culture. Culture becomes policy. Policy becomes outcomes. The chain looks invisible until it is lined up. Then it is plain. A reader might ask if this is only about kindness. It is not. It is about standards. In any field, standards decide who gets trust. If standards hang on looks or labels, the best ideas do not lead. The outcome is weaker schools, weaker products, weaker public safety, and weaker art. Standards must attach to evidence, craft, and results. Why does the first lens hold on? Part of the answer is speed. People use fast judgments in busy rooms. Part is history. Old images still sit in minds from ads, films, books, and jokes. Part is comfort. It feels easy to keep power as it is. None of these parts are fate. They are habits. Habits can be seen and replaced. Seeing them is the first task. This chapter does not offer the fix. It sets the frame and the pressure. It marks the places where the lens shows up and how it moves results. It shows the cost for individuals. It names the broader cost for groups and publics. It lays a question for the next turn. At the city council, the scientist ends her remarks. The plan is clear. The tests are repeatable. The budget is tight and real. The council chair thanks her. The record will show a vote in 2 weeks. Outside the chamber, a resident stops her to ask about plume maps. She stays and answers with care. She has done this many times. She will do it again. In the newsroom, the producer circles a word on the rundown. She changes first name only to doctor. The segment reads cleaner. It is one line on a long day. It is also a line that will air to thousands of homes. A small shift sends a different signal into the room and out to the public. In the office, the hiring manager opens the resumes again. He sees a gap as a gap. He sees care work as skill in planning, conflict handling, and time control. He calls the candidate back. The team will do a structured interview next time. The choice will hinge on tested tasks. That is a better lens. These moments do not solve the problem. They show where respect is built or lost in real time. They show who acts and how. They show that surface can be replaced by substance at the point of decision. The pattern can bend. The standard can move. The next chapter follows what happens when the people inside these rooms push the change and refuse the first lens. Chapter 2, When the Record Pushes Back. 9:30 a.m., Tuesday. A public hospital holds a promotion review. The committee sits with a rubric: patient outcomes, peer assessments, leadership tasks. The transcript shows a clean start. Then the notes shift. Tone, one member writes. Approachability, another adds. Neither word appears on the rubric. Both words tip the scale. The candidate's outcomes were strong. The vote is deferred. Reporting turn 1, paper trails. Meeting minutes, rubrics, and email subject lines often carry the first lens in plain text. Files show where criteria drift from results to style. In one department, executive presence appears in 4 decisions without a defined measure. In another, fit with culture appears next to a 3-paragraph list of technical wins. Culture is not defined. The decision is framed as holistic. The result is predictable. Interview block. A hiring lead explains how fit forms. We move fast, she says. We go with feel at the end. She means no harm. The outcome is harm. Feel is a mirror. People hire reflections of who already leads. When a woman's presence falls outside the mirror, respect is bargained down even when skill is high. Reporting turn 2, language audits. Across internal docs, small words recur. Likeable, pleasant, polished. They appear near women's names more than men's. Near men's names, different words repeat. Decisive, strategic, technical. These labels travel. A promotion panel reads them. A pay committee cites them. A conference planner glances at them and chooses who goes on stage. Midpoint reversal. A manager agrees to a blind work sample test before final interviews. The team receives 3 anonymized case responses. The strongest entry belongs to the candidate who is nearly screened out over tone. Once names are revealed, the room is quiet. The standard moves back to substance. A small process change exposes how fast the first lens had tilted the view. Noon Thursday. A newsroom preps a debate. Producers draft lower thirds. The name bars under speakers. The first pass lists 2 women by first name only and 2 men with title and last name. A junior editor proposes a rule. Use full name and highest accurate title for all guests or none. The change is easy to apply. The air copy reads cleaner. The broadcast now teaches a standard in real time. Data insight. In meeting recordings, interruptions cluster. Software that timestamps each speaker's turn shows a pattern. Women are cut off sooner and asked to smile or hold on more often. The team reviews a month of transcripts. They set a chair's rule. If a person is interrupted, they get time to finish. The next month's interruptions drop across the board. The fix helps everyone, not only women. Respect scales when rules are clear. Reporting turn 3, the compounding effect. A single remark rarely decides a career, but remarks shape assignments. Assignments shape portfolios. Portfolios shape pay and promotion. The record shows a chain of small diversions. When a woman is called a natural people person, she is routed toward facilitation and away from core design. When she excels at facilitation, the praise locks in. The design work builds authority elsewhere. Years pass. The gap looks like destiny. It is history. Interview block. A senior architect remembers a client pitch. They asked me to soften the intro, she says. I kept the numbers. The team won the contract. Afterward, she met with junior staff. They walked line by line through what had carried the room. Cost, risk, schedule, and a clear summary. Respect follows clarity, she tells them. Clarity comes from facts. Her rule becomes team habit. Habits become culture in the same way the first lens does. By repetition. 2 p.m. Monday. Policy review at a mid-size firm. The discipline matrix includes dress code, violations with a wider set of infractions. The records show the code enforced more often on women, especially in frontline roles. The firm revises the policy. Focus on safety, remove subjective terms, train supervisors on consistent application. Complaints decline. Grievances drop. The fix was not dramatic. It was specific. Reporting turn 4. The law is a line, culture is a field. Legal guardrails address discrimination and harassment. Many situations in this series sit upstream of those lines. in a gray space where respect is eroded without a clear legal claim. The work here is administrative, criteria defined, titles used consistently, interruptions managed, selection processes structured, performance notes tied to outcomes instead of surface. None of this requires a court. All of it requires intent. Reversal scene. A city awards committee changes its call sheet. Historically, officials introduced men by achievements and women by personal notes. An admin creates a template. Name, role, project impact, key metric. At the next ceremony, introductions are short, uniform, and substantive. The crowd hears a pattern of merit. The shift feels small. Recipients describe it as the first ceremony where they felt recognized for the work instead of the story around the work. Host aside, brief guiding. The point is not to remove warmth from human settings. The point is to anchor respect in the thing the setting claims to value. Skill, service, results. For 15 p.m. Friday, a university runs peer evaluations. A committee notices comments about approachability, appear most when women grade rigorously. They pilot two fields on the form, one for course design and one for warmth. They weight course design higher, publish the criteria up front, and share examples of feedback that maps to each field. The effect is direct. Students still share how a class felt, but the measure of teaching centers on the craft. Document analysis. Calendar invites and rooms. Who is invited to planning versus social meetings? Who is placed on the head table versus support tables? Seating charts and invite lists record respect. After a quarter of review, one org notices senior women frequently cover logistics, while peers present strategy. They rotate roles, publish a schedule, and add a second presenter to distribute airtime. The strategy readout improves because more people own the content. Interview block. A line supervisor in manufacturing describes a new check. We ask, what evidence did we use to make this call? And we write it down. The question slows a quick bias. It also saves money. Fewer reworks follow when decisions tie to evidence rather than feel. Respect for skill becomes operational. Three case notes, each with a pivot. Case 1, conference intros. Before, she's a mom of two and a mentor. After, she led the rollout that cut downtime by 12%. Pivot, title discipline and metric-first framing. Case 2, hiring loop. Before, unstructured interviews with gut feel summary. After, work sample, scoring rubric, and panel debrief tied to criteria. Pivot. Structure converts respect into a repeatable process. Case 3, media segment. Before, lower thirds mix of names and titles by habit. After, single standard applied across all guests. Pivot. One written rule prevents a dozen small slights. Escalation. In each place that standards tighten, pushback appears. Are we policing language? A manager asks. Another worries that templates remove human nuance. The response is practical. Standards do not restrict praise or warmth. They align the formal parts, introductions, decisions, credits, with the purpose of the room. They keep the measure on the work. A turning interview. A senior leader who once relied on fit agrees to share a miss. I passed on a candidate who later built a system we now admire, she says. The lesson is not guilt. It is method. We replaced fit with three tests and a structured reference call. We still hire for collaboration. We just measure it directly. Evening, community forum. A host reads ground rules. Equal time, no interruptions, titles used for all speakers, questions on topic. The forum runs on time. Attendees note how civil the exchange feels. Civility is not the same as respect, but the rules protect the conditions under which respect can grow. The host ends with a short line. Standards serve the public. What remains unknown? Where do standards fail to travel? One-off fixes, like a good template or a better rubric, can fade when champions move on. The next chapter tracks durability. What locks change in place, what metrics keep pressure on, and what costs appear when the first lens is directly opposed. Verified takeaway for this chapter. When criteria are written, titles are consistent, decisions are tied to evidence, and airtime is managed, respect shifts from surface to substance, and the benefits extend to everyone in the room. The open question: which institutions will commit to these standards long enough for them to become culture, not just a good quarter? Chapter 3, Standards That Hold. 7:45 a.m., Wednesday. a transit board prepares to vote on promotion lists. The chair opens with a reminder. Decisions must cite evidence from the packet. Titles must be used in all remarks. Interruptions will be timed. The room nods. The rules are not the point. The point is what the rules protect. Respect for skill. A fair record. Public trust. What is known by this stage is clear. The first lens pulls attention to the surface. It nicks pay. It diverts credit. It slows careers. We also know that structure pushes back. When criteria are written and applied, the measure shifts to results. When titles are consistent, status signals stop drifting. When airtime is managed, ideas are heard to the end. These facts come from minutes, transcripts, forms, and outcomes. They are not abstract. They sit in the record. Durability now matters more than intent. Good quarters can fade. A champion can leave. The fix becomes a note in an old email. The chapter asks how to lock changes so they last. The answer begins with boring tools that turn into culture by repetition. Hiring and promotion. Work samples, scored rubrics, and structured panels become standard. The documentation includes which criteria weigh more. Technical work weighs more than feel. Collaboration is defined in behavior. It is not a mood. Reference calls ask set questions and record the same fields for every candidate. Decisions list three pieces of evidence. Files show the tie between evidence and outcome. Titles and introductions. A uniform style guide spreads across meetings and media. Use full names and accurate roles on the first reference. Use last names after. Avoid personal labels that do not attach to men in the same setting. If a personal note is relevant, place it after the core credential. The guide is simple enough to remember. It is clear enough to enforce. Meetings and airtime. Chairs set ground rules up front. Finish your thought. One mic at a time. Track speaking time with a visible counter. Rotate who opens the agenda. Keep notes on who brings ideas and who advances them. Publish the summary with names next to contributions. The habit changes who is credited and who is ready for the next task. Feedback and evaluation. Forms split warmth from craft. Each has its own field and its own weight. Examples show what maps to each field. The rubric names vague words to avoid. Likeable. Tone. Fit. The form asks for evidence in place of these words. A sentence must point to a task, a document, a metric, or a decision. Managers learn to coach with specifics. Records improve. Policy and enforcement. Dress code text is tightened to safety and function. Harassment and discrimination rules keep their legal frame. Upstream, a respectful workplace policy covers language and process. It reminds people to attach praise and critique to work. It sets a simple chain for raising a concern without fear of reprisal. The chain has timelines and a paper trail. Anonymous channels exist. Abusive use of channels is itself a violation. Procurement and events. Templates for scripts and agendas build consistency. Introductions follow the title rule. Panels and keynotes list the selection criteria. Selection notes are saved. The goal is not optics. The goal is who the audience learns from. When a stage features a range of experts, younger people see a map into the field. The map is a kind of respect too. Training and cues. New staff learn the standards in week one. Old staff get refreshers with case examples from their own rooms. Leaders model corrections without blame. A person says the wrong frame. The chair fixes it on the spot and moves on. The tone stays calm. The record stays clean. People feel safe to speak. No one is humiliated. The standard rises. Media and public voice. Newsrooms apply a single lower third rule. They check for balance in who appears as experts across a season. They track words that lead into women segments and men segments. If language drifts, they reset it with a memo and a meeting. Shows publish a short note to viewers about how they label guests. The audience learns the rule. The rule teaches the audience what counts. Technology supports the push. Meeting tools can show talk time by speaker. Calendar invites can require objectives and roles. Performance systems can display how often feedback uses banned words. Hiring platforms can force completion of evidence fields before a decision is saved. None of this replaces judgment. It scaffolds judgment so bias has less room to hide. What costs appear when the first lens is opposed? People sometimes feel policed in casual speech. They worry warmth will be lost. Time slows when processes are new. There is a real cost to learning structure. There is a larger cost to running without it. The balance is found by staying human in tone while staying firm in method. A leader thanks a guest for being here. Then they introduce the guest by work and title. Warmth and respect can coexist. There are also edge cases. A personal story is central to a person's work. A poet writes about motherhood and wants that named. A founder ties a family history to a product. The rule adapts. Use the title first. Place the personal note next. The order keeps the central value in view. The person can lead how their story is used. Consent guides the choice. Intersection matters for durability. If the rule helps only one group, it will not survive the next shift. The standards must lift respect for everyone. Interruptions drop across the board when chairs enforce finishing thoughts. Clear criteria help veterans who return from leave. Evidence fields help people whose accents or bodies trigger bias. When a fix helps the whole room, the room defends it. Accountability closes the loop. Leaders publish simple dashboards. How many structured interviews ran? How many decisions cited evidence? How many intros followed the title rule? How often talk time skewed? How many corrections were made on the spot? The numbers do not carry shame. They show whether the habit exists. Trends matter more than a single month. Public bodies can publish these numbers. Private firms can share them with staff. Schools can share them with students and parents. Media can share language audits and editor notes. Transparency invites questions. Questions keep the habit alive. What remains unknown at the end of this series? Which standards scale across culture? Which ones depend on sector? Which ones travel without a champion? We know some pieces travel well. Title standards. Evidence fields. Airtime rules. We know others need more work. How to change the images that live in heads. How to loosen stories learned in childhood and repeated by ads and screens. That work sits beyond one committee and one quarter. It needs art, school, home, law, and work over time. There is also the question of speed. People want change now. Standards take repetition. The gap between want and method creates pressure. Leaders can address that pressure with visible acts today. Write the rubric. Fix the intro. Run the work sample. Publish the talk map. These acts are small. They are also real. People feel the shift when they walk into a room and hear the norm set in two sentences. An ending scene can show how this looks when it holds. The transit board closes its vote. Each decision cites evidence. The chair uses titles for every name. A member who interrupts is stopped with a hand and a smile. The candidate pool looks wider than last year. The people promoted have clear records of work. Writers will not feel a caption or a rubric. They will feel fewer service breaks next winter. Respect traveled into the public result. In a newsroom, a producer runs the style guide without thinking. Lower thirds render the same way for everyone. The show moves with pace and care. Viewers do not see the memo. They hear the guests as peers. They learn to expect substance from the first second. Over months, the guests they see broaden. Young people in homes across the city see themselves in the expert chair. That chair becomes imaginable. At a university, evaluations come in with fewer vague slights. Comments point to course design and learning gains. Students still note warmth. The weight sits on the craft. A young teacher with exact standards is no longer pulled down by words like harsh. She is recognized for a clear course that delivers learning. She still brings care. Her care is seen as a choice, not a demand. At a factory, the supervisor asks the same question at every decision. What evidence did we use? The team answers and writes it down. Scrap drops. Overtime evens out. Respect for skill shows up on the line and in the check. The fix pays for itself. The fix sets a habit. The habit becomes identity. This is how we work here. The people in these rooms are not perfect. They make mistakes. They correct in public and keep moving. That is also culture. No shame spiral. No silence. A clean fix and a clean record. Over time, the first lens still tries to enter. It meets a rule at the door. This series closes with a plain claim. Respect grows when it is measured against work. Respect fades when it is fastened to surface. The choice is not abstract. It is procedural. It is teachable. It is repeatable. It is the kind of choice that can be written in a few lines and carried room to room. Verified takeaway. The durable path is to hardwire standards that keep attention on skill and results, then publish and practice those standards until they read as normal. Open question. Which leaders will choose to make these standards dull by making them routine? And how soon will the rest of us feel the benefits in the quality of the services and stories we rely on every day?